Claire Short is a member of the British Parliament who hit the international headlines when she quit Tony Blair's Labour government over Iraq. As Britain's Secretary of State for International Development from 1997 to 2003, she traveled the world and spoke passionately about issues like poverty and fair trade. As part of our Global Citizen Profile series, Malcolm Brown caught up with Claire Short during a trip she made to Washington. Malcolm started by asking her just how many countries in the world she has visited.
I haven't added up the number. I guess it would be 60, 80, something, maybe half the countries of the world, roughly, something like that.
How many countries have you actually lived in? Has it only been Britain for any period of time?
No, I've never lived. I've been on holiday or spent time in other countries, but I've only ever lived in Britain.
And your formal citizenship is British, obviously. Do you have any other nationality?
Yes, I'm entitled to Irish citizenship. My father was Irish, and Irish citizenship allows back to grandfather, actually. So although I don't have the passport some of my sisters and brothers do, I could have both passports. So I'm Irish citizen, but I'm born and spent all my life in Britain. So I've visited Ireland, obviously, many times.
And how do you identify? Do you feel yourself to be British, British-Irish, or are these not concepts that you really relate to?
It's interesting. I would say happily that I'm British and of Irish origin. That's how I would describe myself. And I wouldn't say I was English. But I think it's becoming very normal in Britain now for people to claim their origins and the diversity of the origins that are in Britain in a way that people used to feel they had to sort of suppress a bit in order to be accepted as truly British. So that's a very nice thing.
As you say, you've travelled to scores of countries and dealt with some multinational issues. Do you feel yourself to be a global citizen beyond your British-Irish identity?
Yes, I very much feel part of the people of the world. I feel the world it's shrinking in the sense that we can all travel so much, we can see what's happening to people in other countries. We're more and more, you know, the environment economically dependent on what happens in other countries. We're more and more interdependent. No country can be safe if the world's in turmoil and in a mess. So I feel very happily, you know, my British-Irish, I was in my Birmingham, where my constituency is where I was born. So that's a big piece of loyalty. But I'm part of a world that I love and that needs to be just and safe for my country, my family, my city to be safe. I feel that in a very natural, organic way.
How do you think people might be encouraged to look at themselves as global citizens on a broader level for the idea to catch on more widely?
I actually think that it's catching on, that because of, I mean, the big technological revolution is communications, and people are seeing each other in a way they never did before. If you think of Tiananmen Square, I mean, to my grandparents, China must have seemed like a mystery far, far away. Do you remember that lad on the bicycle in Tiananmen Square with the tank coming behind him? All over the world, people saw that lad and thought, oh, you know, and felt some sympathy or concern. Or when I was Secretary of State, when there was a sort of crisis in Kosovo or East Timor or something coming on the television, people would come up to me in the street and say, what are you doing, Claire, about this? And these are countries people wouldn't have even heard about 10 years ago. So I think it's naturally happening. People are just seeing the world. I noticed it with the millennium when we all had those television programmes and the dawn has broken here and it went across the world. That sense that it's one world. I think when you go into school, certainly in Britain, children are just very naturally look at the planet as whole and think of it as being, you know, of all of us as being dependent on each other. So I think the political class in Britain and across the world have got a rather old-fashioned sense of the nation state, and the people of the world are globalizing quite sort of sensibly, and they're traveling more, and people are going on holiday to more and more countries, and people have a kind of uncanny understanding that we have to look after the whole planet to look after our own countries. But I think a lot of the politicians are still in an old-fashioned, I must put whatever my country is first, and that's a different interest than everybody else. And I think the elite are behind the people worldwide.
You talk about communications. How do you get your news when you travel around? Do you use newspapers, the web, television, radio?
I'm a big radio user, but when I travel, then I'll look at the local paper. I'm not good at languages, but you can get around the world on English really well. The BBC World Service I would use a lot, and then I'll use whatever the local telly is, like I've been watching CNN and so on in my bedroom. But it is noticeable how the snippets of information are so little, it doesn't give you much depth. So I sort of greedily go around grabbing the bits of news I can get. But when I'm travelling, I tend to be moving quite fast. So, and then, of course, up until recently, when I was in the government, I had people providing me with information. So they would get stuff off the web for me and give it to me in paper form because I was always moving. Now I'm learning to service myself, and therefore I go to the web more often.
Have you read any great books recently that, you know, titles of which you'd want to share?
The books I've read recently have been about Iraq and Britain, really. So John Kampfner has just written a book called Blair's Wars, which I'd recommend, which ends up with Iraq but also looks at Afghanistan and Kosovo and Sierra Leone. I'm reading a book on Gordon Brown at the moment by a guy called William Keegan, who's an economic journalist in Britain. Peter Stoddard, who used to be the editor of The Times, wrote a book called 30 Days about what Blair and his entourage were doing during the Gulf War. I'm very moved by Rwanda and the genocide and our failure to prevent it and how that country has struggled to make progress since and is making progress. And I've read a couple of books on Rwanda in recent years, one by a guy called Prunier, I can't remember the title, and another, it's got a title like Tell Them They're Coming to Get Me Tomorrow or something. I'd really recommend that to people, to think about what happened and how we all signed up to the Genocide Convention after the Holocaust in Europe and how there was a complete failure to act when it was clear a genocide was about to take place. But I read quite a lot, so there's a lot of good books out there.
On more topical issues, where do you think the whole debate about Iraq, the eventual decision to go to war in Iraq and the aftermath, where does all of that leave the world order, the United Nations and so on?
Well, clearly the US and the UK trailing along behind, going to the UN and saying we want to act in the UN, but then failing to get agreement and turning around and blaming the UN, in a way that I think was rather dishonest. It's like saying, you know, this institution doesn't work because I can't bully everybody into letting me have my way, rather than respect the agreement that had been made to get the weapons inspectors back and see if they could make progress. I really think it's wicked the way the French position has been misrepresented. When President Chirac said, let Blix have his time, and if he fails, then I think we'd have to authorise military action. And we were told the French said they would never, ever support any action through the UN. Anyway, but that divided the world badly, and the UN can only work through the Security Council if the big powers work together. And if they block each other in the way they did, that weakens. It doesn't weaken the UN, it weakens international cooperation and the international rule of law. And I think that was worrying, and the thought of the biggest power in the world thinking it can act unilaterally whenever it feels like it and preempt threats, and therefore it just has to say it feels there's a threat and it thinks it can take military action, and it's even implied that could be use of nuclear weapons. I think the threat of that for a world of disorder and danger and might is right is very great, but I think the mess that is in Iraq, which is a tragedy for Iraq, which is a danger for the US, the continuing suffering of the people of Iraq, but the killing of American soldiers and the massive cost because Iraq isn't stable enough to use its own oil, is actually forcing even this great rich country to think we need the international community. So I think in an awful way, lessons are being learned that even America needs multilateralism, needs a strong United Nations, or it's going to end up bogged down in Iraq, spending a lot of money in a way that it would prefer not to.
And the books on Rwanda that Claire Short was just referring to are The Rwanda Crisis by Gerard Prunier and the harrowing account of the genocide written by Philip Gurevich titled We Wish to Inform You That Tomorrow We Will Be Killed With Our Families, Stories from Rwanda. And if you're not sure who Gordon Brown is, he's Britain's Chancellor of the Exchequer, the equivalent of the U.S. Treasury Secretary, who's widely seen as a possible successor to Tony Blair.